Good morning, and welcome to Making a Change for Good. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Bob.
Well, I hear we have electricity, but not Wi-Fi, so I'm back here again today. Hopefully we'll have
Ashwin
tomorrow.
This country living, it has its pluses and minuses.
Yeah. All righty. So here is our assignment from yesterday. Our definition of a subpersonality aspect of ego is a collection of beliefs, assumptions, and projections with a unique worldview and a distinct language. Assignment. Take each of the descriptors from the previous assignment and begin to flesh out each I such that you can recognize each as a distinct personality. Write down the language each uses, what they project onto others, the world, and you. And from that, get a sense of each personality's worldview, or L, what you see. As you work with this, make sure you stay on topic, confining the exploration to the specifics of what you are looking at this month. Example, planner's worldview, language, and projections are, be prepared for every contingency. Unpredictability is dangerous. Think through all possibilities and have a strategy for every eventuality. All right, here is our first caller. You're now live on the air. Will you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi, Sherry. Hi, Bob. It's Karen.
Hello, Karen.
Hi. Well, when I was doing this assignment, I saw three major players. So one is, you know, she's sort of the idea person, and she has tons of fun ideas. You know, like she could just think up stuff, and to her everything's fun. She's very wholehearted, you know, fun loving, all that. And then enters the two major players that kind of always put the kibosh on everything. There's a worker bee subpersonality that just, you know, it's in the language is things like, well, what about, don't you need to do this first, and what about this, and then you need to, and you can't because, and
you're too busy, you don't have time.
Yeah, it's that. And then the other one was just, it might not even be a subpersonality. I think it's just fear. And because that one was all the kind of talks the idea person out of everything, like if I say, oh, I'd love to just go over to the beach and just take my dog, and I've never gone all by myself, and I wonder what that would be like. And then the fearful one tells me what that would be like.
and it's not going to be fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, oh, you know, and so that's what I was noticing. And I guess the big thing I think I'm looking at is that the fear, even though I don't know that that's a subpersonality, even though it does seem to come in very familiar language.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it's always sort of in the guise of protecting me or taking care of me.
So I would project what you're getting to see is how. Fear is the kind of the how of ego.
Yeah.
Right? So ego is an illusion of being separate from life, right? So as soon as we step out of presence, we have stepped into ego. And now this whole world of ego emerges, right? All these people and all this conversation, right? And so the way, what you're getting to see is that the way ego controls everything is through fear. So the subtle form of fear is, well, don't you need to do that? I mean, don't these things need to you know, it's not a screaming fear like you're going to die if you go to the beach with just you and your dog. But it's a controlling, there's something wrong, there's not enough, this is not going to go well, look to me. Look to conditioned mind to tell you. Look to ego, and I'll provide safety for you.
It's definitely a default. I recently read something about the Enneagram that there's like three defaults, and I don't know if this is true, but people either default to fear, anger, or sadness. And when I read that, it resonated because I immediately knew what my default was. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that it's not all fear anyway.
Exactly.
But this is like a direct.
Yep.
It's just
well,
so direct.
That's it. You're experiencing how the illusion of separation maintains itself.
Okay.
Right. And I agree with you. Underneath anger, underneath sadness, underneath everything in the world of ego is fear.
Okay.
And so however that fear is used to control people in these other, you know, fear is I have to be the best. I have to work the hardest. I have to do more. I have to have more money. I have to make sure I have health insurance. So it can look like a high achiever or, a workaholic. What's underneath that?
That's
so important, Karen.
Yeah.
Are you going to go to the beach?
Well, I guess I have to now, huh?
Yeah, I think you have to. Because the dog knows, right?
Yeah.
And so what are you going to tell her? Sorry, I'm too afraid to take you to the beach? I don't think so.
Yeah, well, it's just such dumb. You know, I mean, the fears are things like, well, you're gonna miss, you know, my late husband. That's a big thing. And oh, you're gonna go there, and then you're just gonna, like, really
be sad.
Yeah, be sad, and it's mm-hmm. like, you know, and that isn't where I am in life right now. So
right.
sadness. So I think.
Yeah.
So I guess I have to do this now. So thank you.
That's right. And And the point is, what you're practicing with awareness practice is not being afraid of your own experience. You know you are adequate to your own life experience. So if you get there and you miss him, then you will miss him, and you will have that experience, and you will be fine.
Yeah. And I miss him other places. I mean, I could
That's
be at
right.
the beach. And then,
That's right.
And so, and I just want to rephrase that instead of saying, now I have to go, I'm going to say, now I get to go.
Now
because
I get to
that's,
go.
That's
and
the
you know
beauty
what?
Of seeing it. Yeah.
It'll be fun.
Yeah. Be really fun. Especially when everything's been exposed and I can just watch it. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, again, to go, you know, kind of the whole thing, it's fun to be present. And it doesn't matter what we're present to. So I can be present to sadness. I can be present to loss. I can be present to fear.
Yeah.
It's presence that makes life enjoyable.
Yeah. No, I've been actually, that's been coming up a lot in this play segment because I can be present to taking out the compost. And having a really good time doing
having
it.
Having a really good time.
And so I've been seeing that a lot, trying to, because there is a lot of play aspect to a lot of the tasks
Mm-hmm.
It's been really fun, and I very much appreciate this year-long retreat that we're all on.
Oh, me too.
All
me
the
too.
Men, and so I thank you, and thank you, Bob. And
poor Ashwini. Who's without Wi-Fi and missing us all dreadfully, but equal to her experience.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
All
right.
And probably having a really good time, whatever it is she's being present to.
That's right, listening to us.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay,
go happy.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Karen. And Sherry, I really appreciate the discussion around fear, because what was dropping in for me when you were talking about that is that it seems like there is maybe like a legitimate fear response that's just, you know, from, you know, to protect us, right? When there's a really something.
Adrenaline. Right.
Adrenaline. Yeah.
Not necessarily fear. That's what it gets labeled, but it's really the adrenaline that says, start running or
right.
whatever. Yeah.
Right. And that kind of adrenaline is to, like, you know, to keep us alive, whereas the fear that conditioning wants to introduce is to keep us from life.
Exactly. Exactly. Because one is just a jolt, right? And it jolts us
right.
into presence. And the other is a conversation that takes us out of presence.
Yeah, and I love the way I'm going to try and remember that to, like, there's the adrenaline is like, oh, wake up, there's something right now to
yes.
be attended to, versus fear of, like, which is a separate, completely separate process.
Yes. Yep.
That's really helpful.
Yep. And to tie those together, the conversation kicks in as a reaction to the adrenaline. Right? Because ego really does not like it when we are present, because ego isn't. So there's a big adrenaline rush, and I come to, and the conversation kicks in. Well, what happened is, and what you need to do is, and what this means is, right? And attention goes there, and I'm unconscious again. So it's a good scam for ego. It's very effective.
Yeah, great. That was a great one. Really hope I have that way to work with it.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. Here is our next caller. You're now live on the air. Introduce yourself.
Hi, it's Bonnie from Nova Scotia.
Well, hello, Bonnie.
Hi.
What are you seeing?
Partly I called because there was so much resistance to it. Just now listening to Karen, it feels like people have, right now what's happening for me is there's just like a lot of noise and din and,
inside your head?
Yeah. And, like, it feels like everybody else is thinking about it, and I feel like it's just a huge amount of feeling and darkness, and, like, underneath everything, like, with play, it's like you don't have time that's trivial and superficial, and you have to do this work. But there's also a feeling,
and,
like,
and the work, Bonnie. What is the work?
Oh, I'm a single mom, and so there's always tons of stuff. But the big underneath thing, and I've written in before about this, is like I keep not getting us stable housing, so we always are needing to move. I'm always needing to find another place to live. So there's this like lack of safety, and just now thinking about it, just felt like this, or the day before with I just had this image of this every time I was trying to go somewhere, I kept sort of taking a road down and into darkness and like this pit or a dungeon, and I know I'm not supposed to think about it, but it just feels like the listening is like there's just so much noise and like more of a feeling of malevolence, and like you have to try really hard and you are absolutely going to fail.
Okay. So let me ask you this. Are you recording and listening?
Yes.
Okay. Then I'll tell you what you're not doing enough of.
Listening.
That is recording and listening. That's right. Because if you are giving attention to that system, to that conversation, which is the noise, which is the din, which is that experience of malevolence, if that's where your attention is, you're never going to have a different life experience. Okay. So if you are going in that direction, if you are doing that thing, it will never result in anything other than going in that direction, doing that thing. That is just simply a law of nature. One thing does not lead to another. What we practice is what we get. What we do is what we have. That's what all those mean. So the only way to have a different experience is to have a different experience. You cannot do the same thing and hope for a different result. There's even one of those things about it. Doing the same thing over and over and over, expecting a different result, is the definition of insanity. It's also the definition of ego. So you have to stop doing that. And now, there was a long time in life when that was the encouragement from everybody like me to everybody, okay, just don't do that. Just stop doing that. Well, what do I do instead? And we really didn't have much to offer. Well, turn your attention to the breath. Meditate. Turn your attention to the breath, okay? But now we have something that actually works, that people can actually do. It's simple, it's easy, it's manageable, and everybody can do it. And it will make all the difference, but you have to do it.
I've been doing it. I have more trouble listening than I do recording.
That's right. Bonnie, do you know why? Because if you listen, you will hear something other than the din. And the din is very invested in you listening to it. So you have to listen. And you have to train yourself. And this is life and death, which you know. Okay? You have to train yourself to put your attention on the experience you want to have and keep it there. That's what awareness practice is. If we indulge something else, then we're going to suffer. If you put your attention on the life experience you choose and you learn how to keep it there, you will have the life you choose. There is no other answer. That is the way it works. Okay, so I'm going to leave you with that. I on the open air last night, I said to Michael, don't we have like 13 or 14 years of recordings of open air and in the archives? And he said, well, it's closer to 18 years. Okay, that's a lot of really good stuff to listen to. That's a lot of practice. That's a lot of people practicing, a lot of tips and tools and how-tos. Okay, it could keep a person focused all day long and all night long for a lot of years. I'm going to suggest that you do that and that you stop attending to the life you do not want to have. Okay?
Yes.
And then let me know. Let me know. And I'll yell at you again. I'll yell at you every chance you give me. Okay? Because it's really, 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 really important. Your life depends on it.
I know. Sherry, I feel like I have been going back and listening to a lot of old programs.
No. We don't need to go there. This is your assignment going forward. When you wake up in the morning, you put those earbuds in. Okay? And you have those earbuds in and you are listening. You can listen during probably all but 30 minutes of your day when you might need to be on the phone with somebody. In that case, you can have one earbud in listening to a recording while you have a conversation with somebody about whatever you need to have that conversation about. If you do that, your life will change. If you don't, the odds are good that it won't. Okay? Let me know.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Bonnie. Sherry, I really appreciate that conversation. It felt like a Fervorino in some ways, you know, and it's just that the idea of like replacing the conversation conditioning with essentially what you're pointing out is anything that's going to be the, you know, not that.
That's right.
So it could
be these calls, right? It could be open air. It could be any number of things, primarily where people are doing practice. You know, I don't encourage people to listen to somebody do a guided imagery with them. You know, probably not. But any conversation where people are focusing on practice, coming from presence, talking from presence about presence, that'll take us where we want to go.
Yeah, certainly my experience.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty.
That's why we.
I'm gonna call. What's that?
Okay. No, I was just. It's okay. Why we do this, right? It's why we spend as much of our time as we can doing this. Why in practice we have all of these things that people are involved in: recording and listening trainers, and coaches, and facilitator trainers, and you know all of these kinds of things that people do. So that increasingly they spend more and more and more of their day focused on practice. It's the way. It's the way to freedom.
Yeah, and that's why I project these year-long retreats are so, popular and effective. Is that every day I get the opportunity to start it with this and not with that conversation.
Yes. Yeah, it's everything.
Alrighty, here is our next caller. You're now live on the air. Will you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Christina from Southern California.
Well, hello, Christina.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
What are you seeing?
Oh my gosh, I could say so much about everything that's already been talking about today. Or talked about today, and I'm really going to focus in on the topic and the focus that I've brought to it, and that is, when looking at play, it's such a huge part of my life, and in some ways, I might describe it as my disposition in general. It's one of the strong, it's one of the ways that I just like to be, and then I have this other very opposite side that's very serious and, thinks I should be more serious because of the work that I do and, even the role that I play in my family, etc. And so there's always this, tugging back and forth. So it's fun for me to be able to look at this from a really specific or through a specific lens, and it's been really revealing so far. And the lens that I chose to look through is walking my dog in the morning. I have a 2-year-old dog who's really high energy, and he's just, he is so lovely, and he's kind of naughty. Like he can, he's a lot of work. And so I had been walking him every day for probably the first year and a half of his life, and I was walking with friends, and then slowly the group began to dissipate, and I found myself not willing to go just by myself.
Christina, we will never let him know that you describe walking with him as walking alone, okay?
Exactly.
I'm not telling.
Please don't. Please don't. Because it is. It's one of those places. It's like I have this adorable being that his whole goal in the morning when he wakes up is to stare at me and, and to want to lick me or jump on me or whatever it is.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. Say, let's go. It's our time to play. And so I got to see all the things that had the conversations that had come up every day around why I shouldn't do it and why it was too hard or why, he behaved too badly and it was hard. He'd tug my arm or just really dumb reasons when you say them out loud that were very persuasive internally. And so it's so fun to choose a topic like this because I don't have that much, it's not that heavy for me, so I'm able to be lighter with it and see how all the same stuff comes up. And I actually got to see fear come up in this so far since I've been looking at it. And it's it's such an important practice for me to be able to watch the physical response to a conversation and recognize that that conversation is not real and know that it's not real but still have the physical experience and even that it's wholly irrational. And so this, you know, this came up for me last time I was at the monastery, and since I started looking really closely at this process of walking the dog, I actually got awakened in the middle of the night at 2 a.m. in a panic attack. And I was so present. I could see what was happening. And I watched myself have to actually go to a story because I was like, why is my body feeling this way? What was I dreaming? And I had to go back there, and I'm looking at the story that I was dreaming, and I could see how it wasn't real. You know, like I'm taking in everything that's going on outside the house or whatever. And it was just so curious. Anyway, I know I'm talking a lot,
and
but it's just
so helpful.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
It's helpful to see that. I mean, that's one of those, no, that is not my idea of a good time to wake up in the middle of the night in a panic attack. Okay? And what an informative experience.
Yes.
Because you got to see the same thing is true walking around, right? As story starts up and you get engaged with it, it's not real. And yet the body starts reacting as if it is. It's that old thing that people discovered, I don't know, sometime in the 50s, that the body cannot tell the difference between what's happening and what isn't happening, right?
Yeah.
It's just, you're engaged in a scary story, and the body is reacting with fear, panic, right? And so to get to see that and realize that that conversation that's going on in the head all the time is not innocuous. It may seem like it is because it's just, you know, I'm just thinking about what I need to do today and what the, you know, there's no price to be paid. Yeah, there's a huge price to be paid for that because that is signaling you what is so and how you need to be with that, and none of it is happening.
Exactly. And it's that exact conversation that kept me from getting up and walking with this being that I love, that I chose to come into my life. You know, I went and, you know, found him and brought him home, and I picked him out. I'm raising him. He's just, and because I love having a dog. I love being in that relationship. I love the whole experience of it. And that time in the morning is just so invigorating. You know? And I got talked out of it just by that conversation, out of something that's so, one, easy to do, and two, it's really hard to develop a story of fear around it, yet somehow conditioning managed to do it, and I managed to fall for it.
That's exactly right. And the other thing that you said that is so important for us to remember is it's really believable inside the head, and as soon as you say it out loud, you realize, well, that's stupid. It takes guts to say it on a show like this, right? But fortunately, what you know is we all do the same thing, right? Which is another argument for recording and listening. Because inside the head, it has power. You say it out and hear it and go, oh, my God. No, that is not going to be in charge of my life. That is just stupid. And we're empowered.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was through practice that I first experienced that some years ago, where I recognized the power of getting it out of the head so you could actually see it for what it is. I'd gone through my whole life to that point without being able to see that.
Yeah.
And I just want to say...
Oh, go ahead. No, I want
to... No, you, please.
Well, it's just what I was saying to Bonnie. You know, we are so lucky to have this. Because for years, people could go talk to a therapist. But that's not the same. You know, I say it to you, but I don't hear it. And even if the person reflects it back to me, I don't hear it in the same way. There's just nothing as powerful as getting that stuff out of our heads and then hearing it. It's,
yeah.
Well, anyway, you know I'm excited about that. Yeah. Now, what were you going to say?
Yeah. Just that I've been carrying this guideline with me as I'm, because I record and listen for the first part of our walk usually. And I've been carrying this guideline with me that I'm not, because I set the goal of walking every morning with him during this month, and I'm not doing it to actually do the walk or for any particular reason around doing the walk, but really keeping my attention on, I'm just watching the process. I'm just watching the resistance. I'm
just
watching the fear.
And
just being there, yes, and being okay with all of it. And that's, and it's helpful to be reminded of that because I tend to get really goal-oriented, and then there's a strong pattern of feeling bad if I don't, you know, meet the goals as they're continuously shifting.
That's the only reason to have goals, right? Is that we get talked out of meeting them and then feel bad.
Right.
No wonder ego went after you, right? You're experiencing unconditional love, and you're recording and listening. I mean, come on. That's
right.
Talk about a direct threat to ego. Two of them.
Yeah.
That's yeah. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Go happy.
I shall. You too.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Christina. And Sherry, that brings us to the end of this show. And just, I appreciate the conversation because the two things I'm taking out of today's call is one, you know, replacing the conversation and then getting the conversation out of the head. And if I can just do those two things regularly, I'm in pretty good shape.
in increasingly good shape, right? Because the more we do that, the easier it gets. The more time we're here, the more we're present. The happier we get, it's just a wheel of karma turning toward ending suffering, turning away from suffering.
Great. All right, so here's our assignment for today. Draw portraits of the aspects of ego you've seen. Jot down what each says. RL.
All right.
Thanks, Sherry. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Bob. Really appreciate it. In case Ashwini makes it back, just want to let you know again how much we appreciate you being there and stepping in and doing such a great job for us. So,
all right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Take care. Thanks, everybody. Bye.